On today's episode, Michael Laurier joins me, and we talk all about his new book, Forging Excalibur, masculinity, and what it means to be a man in the modern world. Michael, my friend, thank you so much for joining me, man. How are you?
Awesome, Nick. Thank you, mate. Yeah, I'm really good. I'm really awesome. Thank you.
We were having a brief chat before the podcast started, and it's actually pretty funny hearing an Aussie accent because I'm from New Zealand and I haven't heard a lot of it the last like 10 months. So that's cool.
yeah, it's awesome. And I'm used to that accent as well. My wife's from Auckland and all of her family. Also, I hear it a lot.
That's cool. So
almost like home for me too.
So what I really wanted to do is just really dive in. You're a relatively new author. You've got a book called Forging Excalibur, and I just wanted to read a little bit of the description from Amazon because I think just this little paragraph is so powerful in and of itself. We can dive into what this really means to you and how you came up with the idea of the book and why you decided to write a book. So. Sure. Our modern toxic success-driven society is placing enormous pressure on men to acquire material wealth and social acceptance, resulting in men feeling even more inadequate and uncertain, creating deeper levels of disconnection with themselves. There is nothing wrong with money nor achievement, but to make success the driving force is damaging men as they do not know how to strive for goals and achievement while still remaining healthy, well-balanced men, able to integrate their masculinity in a healthy way. Man, when I read that, I was like, this is so spot on. And this is a topic and a subject that so many of the world's men need to hear about. So what drove you to write Forging Excalibur?
Yeah, cool. Okay, so that's a really good passage to start with, actually, because what drove me to write Forging Excalibur is that I've been mentoring men and doing relationship coaching now for probably 15 years, coming up to 15 years.
Amazing.
And especially over the last five, what I've noticed is that a lot of men who come to me are actually suffering from what Jordan Peterson calls a crisis of purpose. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, what I actually mean, it really means that men lack purpose and direction in life, right?
Yes.
And these are two of the very necessary attributes which create integrated masculinity in men, because without that purpose and direction, men really sort of fumble through life, mm-hmm. and they jump from, you know, what might be called one shiny object to another and never really stick with anything long enough to create something meaningful for themselves, nor be able to contribute effectively to their families, you know, and let alone society as a whole. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed is in men, that's been a real thing over the past 5 years or so, maybe longer, but I've noticed it more over the last 5 years, where men have really gotten to the point collectively where they can't actually attach any sense of identity to anything. They don't feel like they're showing up in life and in their relationships at a higher level. They're not quite sure how to lead their sons and their daughters to be well-balanced individuals. And what happens, and I've noticed this in the mentoring that I do with men, because they get to a point, usually in their mid-30s to late 30s into early 40s at the latest, where they just start to question everything. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty normal, but I'm noticing it recently at a higher level. And this is because of what I believe to be a toxicity within our society, of a very success-driven society, because we have this picture of what men need to actually be achieving in life, and it is such a high level, mm-hmm. that most men can't actually attach a sense of purpose to that. All they're doing really is they're striving for this level of success that society tells them they have to, and that they feel like they need to in order to feel relevant and in order to feel like a man and a good husband and a good father. And the problem that I've found is that what that does is when men don't get to that point, or when they find it very, very difficult, it actually starts to develop more of a sense of inadequacy within them and forces them into areas of anxiety and depression and then failed relationships. And a lot of men actually end up at a point where they suicide, or they feel like, you know, just ending it all, so to speak.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest statistics that I have come across in my research for this book is that here in Australia, and I think it's quite relative all around the world, but here in Australia, 78% of all suicides are men.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that really spoke to me. And I thought, well, there's just something not right here. And when I found, and also over the last 5 or 6 years or so in relationship coaching, I've found that many, many, many couples are coming to me as a result of the fact that the man has just become distant and almost absent within the relationship. And when you dig a little bit deeper, it's not because he doesn't love his wife or partner or he doesn't want to spend time with his children. It's because he is so focused on achieving this level of success that society tells him that he has to. And there's such competitiveness out there in the workplace and just in business and in life within men. Plus on top of that, they've attached a sense of, well, if I don't succeed in my career, then I'm not really providing for my family properly. And if I'm not doing that, then what sort of a husband and father am I?
Wow.
And yeah, so, and women actually don't find that attractive. They would much prefer a man who has a sense of purpose and direction in life, the ability to be decisive, a man with some self-confidence and self-assuredness and some leadership qualities and that strength of character and resilience as well. And in my research, only, I think it was 4.3% or 3.4%, I can't remember the figure now, of women actually said, no, I don't want all of that stuff. I actually want someone who makes a ridiculous amount of money. And I don't care if I don't see him. I don't care if I don't see him as long as there's money in the bank that I can use.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we start to put all these things together, we start to see that because men aren't able to show up at the higher level that they actually want to, when they do achieve this level of success that society tells them that they should and they feel like they have to, they actually look around and they've got nobody to enjoy it with. Yeah. And they don't even feel a sense of fulfillment or purpose having achieved it because they've lost everything that they actually value along the way. And that is always their family, their partner and their family. This version of success that we're told that we must achieve is meaningless to men if they don't have their family right there with them.
Wow.
And so really this is the motivation behind the book. And I've experienced this in my own life. There were quite a few years ago, where I was doing exactly the same thing. I was jumping from one shiny object to another, just trying to find something that would help me to feel fulfilled and successful as a man. And so when you couple my own experience with what I've noticed out there in society and within my clients, I kind of go, you know what, there is actually a crisis here within men that is causing problems within their own psyche and within relationships. Mm-hmm. And these men have no actual real benchmark in terms of how to bring up good quality boys as well, and even how to set a good example for their daughters of what sort of man they can or they should tolerate or at least seek as someone to be in a relationship with. And
so true.
Yeah. So that's the motivation behind the book. I know it was a very long answer, but
it's a very complex question. Like when you really start to dig into all of the facets of what that actually means, it's huge, and there are so many moving parts within that. What I'd really like to know is, in your opinion, how do we fix that? Because it's obviously a cultural thing. It's something that's kind of crept up through years and years and years of societal conditioning to just be accepted as the norm. So how do we change that? How do we get those suicide statistics down? Because New Zealand's the same. I think New Zealand's the highest country in the third world, in the first world for suicide rate. And same as Australia, right? You look at our countries, look at our government, we're pretty privileged in terms of life in these countries, yet that exact thing is happening, a meaningless drive toward something we don't really understand. So how do we get to the root of that and how do we fix it?
Well, there's a few, I mean, that's a big answer as well, but I'll start by saying that the subtitle for my book is Rediscover Your Masculinity.
Nice.
And so And so when we start to look at what that actually means, what does masculinity actually mean? Mm-hmm. When we start to create a fusion of different virtues, which I believe all men should and could embody as a well-balanced masculine man, we start to talk about things like, and these are the seven standards of men that I talk about in the book. Mm-hmm. So what they are is courage, integrity, strength, and what I mean by strength is inner strength, not necessarily physical strength.
Yes.
Compassion, a sense of purpose, self-actualization, which really is just a very high level of self-awareness, and the ability to be able to take 100% ultimate responsibility for all of their results in life. Right.
I love that.
And so, thank you. And so, the answer to your question really is to start to create as many men as possible who embody these virtues and are able to integrate all aspects of the masculine into themselves. And what I mean by that is I talk about this in the book as well, and that is that Carl Jung talked about the shadow. And the shadow is really the subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. And the subconscious mind, when you start to marry that up with masculinity, there's part of masculinity is aggression, okay? That's just, and that can be a very good trait if used effectively and used appropriately. But what we see a lot of men running around with that masculine trait of aggression being totally unembodied.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is that they have no idea whatsoever how to manage their emotions, how to manage their state, and how to really become aware of, okay, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling like I just could punch something right now, but what I'm going to do instead of punching something or someone or becoming verbally abusive, what I am going to do is I'm going to go off and I'm going to allow that part of myself to express, but in a very, very healthy way. So I'm going to go for a run, or I'm going to go to the gym, or I'm going to go punch a punching bag in the in the garage, or whatever I'm going to do. I'm actually going to start to learn better ways of expressing these traits and these parts of the masculine that are healthy. Because what happens is that when we don't understand how these masculine traits can play out, we start to create a lot of toxicity. And this is where we see things like toxic masculinity start to bleed into our society and into our consciousness and into media as well. And this is a big part of why men feel the way that they do, is because the indoctrination in society and throughout media of toxic masculinity has gotten to a point where we're not trying to help men to say, okay, well, this is that part of you that is just there. It's an innate, inherent part of the masculine. And what we're going to do, instead of calling you as a man, just because you're a man, we're going to call you toxic, mm-hmm. because the parts of the masculine, what we're actually going to do is we're going to teach you how to embody and integrate that properly. Because if we stop suppressing all of these things and we start expressing them, but we learn how to express them in really healthy, meaningful ways, then what happens is that nothing gets suppressed. Mm-hmm. And when nothing gets suppressed, there's nothing that will explode, or we won't implode at some point in the future, but there's no chance of us actually exploding and really expressing those traits in what may be called a toxic way. And so, yeah, I hope that answers your question. But in terms of how to change these paradigms and this indoctrination, it really becomes about men stepping up into these seven standards of men and understanding and learning how to embody them. Because when we start to embody them as individuals and a collective, we can then start to demonstrate, well, this is a really good example of a masculine man, of a man who has some courage and integrity, strength, compassion, purpose, is highly self-aware and takes responsibility. Because let's face it, that's what society needs in men, and that's what women want in men. Mm-hmm. And so when we try to suppress all of these things, and when we start to see a man that starts to step into his confidence and self-assuredness and expresses some leadership qualities, and has the ability to be decisive and has some purpose and direction in life and shows some strength of character, our society immediately just tries to beat that down and suppress it. and say, well, that's toxic because you're displaying confidence. That's not confidence, that's arrogance, and that's masculine, that's toxic. And so what we're going to do is we're going to suppress that and beat it down as much as possible. And this is why men are in the state that they're in collectively, not everybody, not every man, but collectively, this is why men are in the state that they're in, because each time they try to step into that masculine and start to really enhance those masculine virtues, it's almost like society doesn't like it anymore and they want to beat it down and suppress it as much as possible. Yeah. And so my answer to your question is we need to start teaching men how to embody these traits and really start to integrate them into themselves at a very, very high level. Because then what happens is that then they know how to guide boys and their sons into becoming better versions of who they are becoming now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's nice. I like that. And one word that came up right when you were beginning to explain that was that self-awareness. And that fell under, you know, the larger bracket of those seven things. But self-awareness is something I preach so strongly because I think it's like the backbone to all of this, right? Like understanding what actually needs to be worked on and then taking that accountability and actually working on it is just something that so few men do. So I'd love to hear your opinion on how to begin to build self-awareness. Like, how do you culture self-awareness within yourself?
Look, you know what? Socrates said, know thyself. Yeah. And that's the biggest part of self-awareness. And so what we need to start to do is be able to learn how to observe, just observe ourselves from a different place.
Mm-hmm.
When we are in a moment, we're usually acting very unconsciously and we're thinking and feeling and doing on very unconscious levels. And so when we start to, even the awareness of that is enough to start someone on the process of sort of self-reflection. And self-reflection is really the first stage of developing a greater level of self-awareness. Because when we can start to self-reflect, we start to observe our thoughts as they happen, mm-hmm. and then we can start to choose the emotions that we focus on. And then when we do that, we start to alter behaviors mm-hmm. and what essentially comes out of our mouths. Because it's a lot of the time it's the words we use, the language we use, the way that we behave that can either create better relationships or make existing ones unhappy in some way.
Yeah.
So I'm a big advocate of helping people to really observe themselves at deeper levels and at higher levels. And I think that builds a really good sense of self-awareness. At least that starts the process anyway.
Mm-hmm. That's really awesome. So what was your actual process of writing the book? Like, how did you come up with the content? Is it just a culmination of all the stuff you've been working on for years? Because you said in your intro, you've been working for years as a relationship coach and a mentor for men. So how did you come up with the content of the book?
Well, it was a couple of things. So one of them was definitely as a result of experience, my own personal experience and within coaching and mentoring too. So over nearly 15 years, you learn a lot of stuff. And you start to get to know people, and you start to get to know people not just individually but collectively, and you start to see patterns, and you begin to understand what drives people and motivates people and where people are generally mostly lacking and what they need to start embodying at higher levels, right? So it's that kind of experience that formed at least the framework for the book. And then what I did is I thought, well, I don't want to go in and just write another personal development book because there's so many personal development books out there.
Yeah.
I would like to do something a little bit different, and I would like to form some kind of allegory around this that men will really connect with, first of all, and that I can start to teach people and start to help people become aware that becoming the best version of yourself doesn't happen in 5 minutes or overnight or in a week or in a month.
Yeah.
It is an ongoing process of self-evolution that happens over a period of time. It's a process. And then I thought, well, okay, well, what processes do we have out there that are innately masculine because it's a book for men, that I can relate the process of self-discovery that a man goes through throughout life. And I thought, and I really reflected on this for a period of time, and I thought, well, and I've got a big whiteboard here in my office, so I started just scribbling some things down. And the very first thing that I started with was, what's a really good allegory, a masculine allegory that men will really resonate with, something that's powerful, something that really has just a real masculine feel to it. And one of the first things that came up was Excalibur. So we all know the legend of Excalibur and King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. And there was a lot of strength and nobility, and there was purpose, and there was integrity and courage. And I started building all of this around that Excalibur. And then I thought, well, that's good. That's a masculine symbol. But how does that reflect back on the journey that a man goes through during life to build a sense of self-awareness and become the person that he wants to be and realize his full potential? And then I started looking into the legend of Excalibur, because I thought, I started wondering how Excalibur was made. And when I started realizing that it was a forging process, because swords are forged, of course. So, I thought that's just a perfect allegory for the way that men start to discover themselves over years and years and years. Because you see, what happens with the forging of a sword is all the metals combined first, and then the forge is lit, and then we start to see the shape of something. It's usually just a block of steel, and then that block of steel has to be hammered and cooled and heated again, and hammered some more, and folded and heated again, and hammered and folded and crafted, and all this sort of stuff, right? And I thought, wow, that is so... I just looked at my own experience in life, and I thought, that is so indicative of what I've gone through. I've been heated, so that's when we're under adversity, and then and struggle, and then we get hammered, and that's almost like we're starting to really be formed into a sort of a shape, and that's what the hammering process does. And then, just as you feel like you're developing a sense of self, you get dipped into the fire again, and you have to start facing some more adversity. And this is an ongoing process. So if you look at what happens when a sword is forged, it gets dipped into the fire and hammered and folded a few times, and then it's allowed to cool for a period of time. And that's really a transitionary period of time for a man before he faces more adversity and gets dipped into the fire again. And I just thought it was a wonderful allegory for the journey that a man goes on throughout life, from childhood all the way through to, you know, mid-adulthood. And when I say mid-adulthood, I mean, you know, in his early 40s, mid-40s. And that's when the almost like the hardening process and the crafting and shaping process happens. And that's where you've got some form, you've got some substance, you're useful and purposeful in some way. And now it's a matter of really crafting and shaping who you will become and who you will carry with you into the rest of your life. Wow. And so, yeah, the allegory of forging Excalibur is really powerful, I think, because it's a real masculine symbol, first of all. We can all identify with what Excalibur is. And, yeah, and the whole process of forging is likened very, very much to the journey a man goes on throughout life in order to create the best version of himself that he possibly can.
That's awesome. I want to ask you, how does a man begin to find his purpose?
Well, another big question.
Yep.
The way a man starts to find his purpose or begin to realize what his purpose is to first of all, I talk about this in the book as well, is to first of all start to really identify what his core values are. And what a core value really is something that, if it wasn't in your life, and that can be a person or a thing or a circumstances or conditions or whatever, whatever is in your life now, if you lost that particular thing, how would that feel? And so for men, more than anything, for men, their highest core value is usually family. And family encompasses partner and children. generally. We can talk about extended family as well, but we'll keep it simple.
Yeah.
And it's really family, right? And then generally in amongst all of that as well, most men's three core values, most men, their three core values are family, health and well-being, like just having a good health and well-being, and having some sense of purpose and direction or a good career that they're passionate about.
Nice.
Whether that's business or whatever it is. And so when we start to really bring that, and for some men it's different, right? But this is generally men, that's their three core values. And when we start to identify that and then have a look at our results in life, and we look at, okay, we look at relationship, we look at family, we look at career or business, we look at our financial situation, we look at all these aspects, we look at socially, what's our circle of friends like, and when we look at all these different aspects of our lives, and we start to break it all down, and we start to go, okay, well, when I start to really apply my three core values to my relationship, am I showing up in my relationship in alignment with those three core values? Am I showing up in my career and business in alignment with those three core values, and my relationship with money and my friendship circle and my hobbies and my interests and how I live my life? Is it all really in alignment with my three core values? And so when we start to unpack all of that and really go very deep into it, and we start to apply those core values to each and every aspect of a man's life, we start to see a man step more into a sense of purpose and have a sense of direction. And what that purpose is, it may not necessarily be a job, or it may not necessarily be a relationship, but it will be this overarching thing that he decides, well, this is what I want to strive for in life, and this is what I want to do, and this is how I want to contribute and have some purpose in life, and this is my thing. And it's usually going to be attached to the three core values and that one thing that we can all do where we get into a state of flow very, very easily. And when I talk about a state of flow, that's that thing that you can do where you can spend a ridiculous amount of time doing it without even realizing that time has passed. You forget to eat, you forget to sleep, you lose track of time. It's something that fulfills you, you're passionate about it. And so this is where we start to form and understand what purpose actually means. It's that thing combined with your three core values in relation to all of the aspects of life that are important to you, and then we start to build a sense of purpose around that. So it's not necessarily an easy process to understand what that thing is, but you can apply some structure to it and some intention to realize it at some point in the near future.
Awesome. Awesome. Good answers.
Yeah, thank you.
What are some of the trends you've seen, especially with coaching primarily men over the last 15 years? What are some of the trends that you've seen just within masculinity or within men or within relationships over that time?
So what I've seen is I love getting controversial, but...
Good, yeah, do it.
So something that I've really noticed, you know, if we want to talk about toxicity in our society, one of the big areas where I can point to really is, yes, we live in a very toxic, success-driven society, mm-hmm. but also I believe that this fourth going into fifth wave of feminism is incredibly toxic in and of itself. Mm-hmm. I think feminism and feminists started off with a really great ideal back in the 60s and 70s, and that was about women should have more rights, right? So women should have been allowed to vote forever. That should never have been a restriction. Mm-hmm. Women should have been welcomed into the workplace in whatever position, whatever they wanted to do and whatever passion they wanted to follow, that should have always been a thing, and women should have always been allowed to do that.
Yep.
And be accepted and not be discriminated against in any way. And in the same context, women should be able to turn up to work and do their thing and really contribute at a high level without being leered at and having sexual harassment issues and all that sort of stuff, right?
Yep.
However, feminism, and when I say however, I don't mean, well, you know, that's all good except for.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I want to be very clear on the fact that I've always believed that feminism should never have had to have been a thing.
Yes.
And women should never have had to stand up for their rights initially, right? So, because it should have just been a given thing that women can do and should be able to do everything that men can, mm-hmm. and that we can just have equality of opportunity forever. That should have just been a thing forever, but it wasn't. And so this is how feminism was born. And it started out well, as did the Me Too movement. It started out with the right intentions.
Yeah.
And what we've seen over the last 10 years is we've seen all of that turn very toxic. We've just seen feminism at its core really begin to turn very toxic and turn into, well, we don't care anymore. We just want what we want, regardless of who gets hurt. We just want what we want. And you men have just created this patriarchal society that is just not acceptable anymore. And now we're just going to hate men as much as possible, and we're going to degrade men as much as possible, and we're going to stamp them out and stamp them down and get rid of masculinity because it's toxic. And plus, on top of that, we're going to use this newfound power to take advantage of the corporate world. And what we're going to do now is we're going to say we need to have equality of outcome in terms of ratios in the workplace of women to men.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, on top of that, we're going to, even if you look at us in the workplace in a way that we believe is offensive, we're going to get offended, and then we're going to tell everybody about that, and then you're going to be done for sexual harassment, and we're going to really take this Me Too movement into the stratosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think I've lost track of the question, because I got into all of this and I lost track of the question a little bit, but where I see things kind of failing for men is that when we put all of this together, men are in this position now where we go, wow, I don't feel like I can even be alone in a boardroom with a woman at work. Mm-hmm. I'm now starting to see a pattern where men are becoming the disadvantaged party within workplaces, because if employers don't have these ratios, you know, don't have these male to female ratios in the workplaces, and they need to have an extra woman, for instance, in a particular role or in the workplace to even out those ratios, then maybe I won't get that job, even though I'm just as qualified as that woman. Maybe I won't get it now because I'm a man.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing this a lot now. I'm seeing, you know, and we see these ratios in workplaces starting to now disadvantage men,
mm-hmm.
because if a company doesn't have 40% women, I think in most cases now, and now we're seeing it in politics as well. If they don't have a certain ratio of women to men, it's not seen as a workplace which is equal. And so women are getting more consideration, even though in some areas they may not be as competent as their male counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is set in reverse as well, because there are a lot of competent women out there doing jobs that, you know, they are more qualified than what they're doing, and they should be stepping into more leadership roles, and they're not, because for whatever reason they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're really finding is, I'm finding, because I do leadership stuff within workplaces as well, and I work with a lot of companies within change management.
Yeah.
And what I'm finding that when we start to talk, and when I start to talk with HR, they're talking more about equality of outcome as opposed to equality of opportunity.
I was actually going to ask about that, because those are two pretty key words, and I think the balance is very, very swayed there to equality of outcome, right?
It really is, because we're really getting to a point where we are so focused on ratios within the workplace that. And I'm not saying, by no stretch of the imagination do I believe that women are incompetent, but when we look at two people that are applying for the same job, one's a man, one's a woman, and they've both got equal qualifications, equal experience, and they'd both be just as good in that particular position, by default these days, people will employ the woman simply because of the fact that they are afraid of the consequences if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in that particular environment, perhaps a man might be more suited to that particular environment because of whatever it might be. And we're also swaying more towards that, and we're seeing people are even getting employed for positions that don't have the same qualifications as the man, and women are getting employed in those positions and they're less competent, but they're getting employed simply because there's an outcome that has to be achieved. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing the opposite happen, where men are starting to be discriminated against in the workplace mm-hmm. as a result of corporations focused more on equality of outcome instead of opportunity.
What can men do to work towards bringing that balance back? Because it's almost like it's gone from one side to the other side, but really, if equality is what we're talking about, it should be equal opportunity, not equal outcome, right? How do we work towards a more equal opportunity? What can we do as individuals to work towards that?
Yeah, well, as individuals, not a lot, but as a community, we definitely need to as a community. So one of the underlying factors here when we talk about equality, especially in the workplace, is that there's an attitude out there that women are being discriminated against, and they're being discriminated against as a result of the fact that biologically they are the only ones at the moment with our current technological level of technology. We only women can have children. Mm-hmm. And so what we're finding in the workplace is that we have this attitude in some workplaces where, well, if I've got a man that's in his late 20s and a woman that's in her late 20s, I'm probably wanting to lean more towards the man because I don't know whether that woman may decide to fall pregnant or may just fall pregnant over the next year or two or three. Mm-hmm. And then I've got maternity leave and I've got to replace her and I've got to keep a job open, and that costs me money and it costs me time, and I've got to train somebody else. So my belief, having worked with individuals and with couples and in organisations as well, I have a strong belief that if we are able to, within workplaces, and form some legislation around this as well, where it is entirely appropriate that when we employ somebody, whether they are male or female, that when we employ somebody, we are allowed to ask them to sign something from a contractual point of view that states that if for some reason their personal circumstances, and we'll exclude health issues with this.
Yeah,
we exclude health issues, but if there is something that happens in their personal life, or they make a choice in their personal life to change their circumstances, which then directly or indirectly affects their ability to perform their role, then they're not entitled to benefits mm-hmm. Within the workplace that we're all used to now, and we just take as a given that we have. So, yeah, I believe that's probably a really good outcome to think about that we could implement within workplaces. And what that does is it will then create much less discrimination, and it will probably eliminate it altogether, because if I was an employer and I ran a small business and I had a man and a woman in front of me, and instinctually I knew that probably that woman is probably a little bit better for the position than the man, for whatever reason that might be, mm-hmm. but then there's something in the back of my mind saying, well, I'm just a small business here. I can't afford for her to run the risk of her perhaps potentially falling pregnant at some point in the near future. And then I've got to go out and I've got to spend more money to replace her. Mm-hmm. Plus, on top of that, I can't even replace her with someone permanent because I have to leave her position open for 12 months while she takes time off to do whatever she needs to do with her new baby. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, whilst I don't have a problem with anything, I think it's a matter of us. And I'll change my answer a little bit. I think we can make a difference from an individual perspective and also from a collective perspective as well. Yeah. Collectively, we can have legislation where we can invite those kind of contractual arrangements in. But what we need from an individual perspective is for individuals to start taking more responsibility for their own personal circumstances and how that affects the business or the company that they work for.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So I think, individually we need to take more responsibility. And collectively, we need to start putting things in place that reduce inequality in the workplace and hopefully eliminate discrimination.
That's good, man. Good answer.
Thank you. Thank you.
So if people want to read your book, follow you, check out what you're all about, what's the best way for them to do that?
Okay, cool. So the best way to do that is I'm all over social media, just under my name, Michael Lauria, Lauria.
Cool.
And my book is available on Amazon. Forging Excalibur, Rediscover Your Masculinity. You can't miss it. It's got a big sword with fire on a black cover. You can't miss it. That's available on Amazon in ebook format, soon in the next week or so in paperbook format as well.
I saw you were working on that. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's available, but not on Amazon yet. So if anybody wants to buy a paperback copy, I'm just doing that at the moment individually. So people can email me or send me a Facebook message or whatever it is. In one of the pages that I've got my men's mentoring page, which is just Michael Lauria, and then I've got my relationship coaching page, which is Michael Lauria, the Conscious Relationship Coach. My website as well, michaellauriacoaching.com. So people can reach me in a number of different ways.
Great. And I'll put those in the show notes as well so people can just go there directly.
Cool. Thank you.
For the last question, I just want to ask, in your opinion, what is something that men can do every single day as part of their routine to make sure they're staying on top of everything?
The very, very best thing they can do is start to understand what it means for them to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is that they actually would like to, if we fast forward 5 years or fast forward 10 years, what would you like to look back and see over that period of time? So it's really about future pacing yourself a little bit, being in the present moment, yes, but fast forwarding 5 or 10 years. And then I want you to kind of look back on yourself and what is it, who is it that you want to have become mm-hmm. in 5 years' time? And what is it that you want to have achieved? And that's more from an individual perspective as opposed to a success perspective.
Nice. I really like that. Well, cool, man. I know you've got a really, really busy day ahead. So thank you so much for taking time out of your day and your schedule to join me on the podcast.
No worries, Nick. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
No worries, bud. I'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thanks.
See ya. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Limitless Podcast. I hope you got so much value from the episode, and if you did, I would absolutely love if you could hop on over to iTunes and leave a review, and also tag me on Instagram at the Limitless Podcast.